Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
I was just thinking about how blind I'm going.
Are you going blind?
And
hello. That
is it me you're looking for?
I can see it in your eyes.
I can see it in your smile. He's a bit of a dude, isn't he? I like Lionel Richie. I shopped in one of his shops in California, in Los
Did
Angeles.
You?
One of the shops that he Where? Regularly goes into.
Oh, John, somewhere that he John frequents. Vavetus,
John Vavetus. John.
Yes.
Vavetus, yeah.
Where you bought the perfumes.
I went there and I was like, it's John.
Yeah. Did you buy shoes there?
I did. I bought shoes there and they were like $1,400, and I was like, wow, look at these shoes. I think I was more excited about spending $1,400 in shoes than the actual shoes themselves.
That's
when I got them home, I was like, they're a bit average.
You could have bought a couple of your D squareds by then.
I bought a couple of D squareds with that. Okay, the monkeys are telling me to
I was going to suggest singing Blinded by the Light instead, since you were going blind.
Yeah,
but nobody ever knows.
We've done that. We've done Blinded by the Light. But okay. I think, hello. Is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile. That song's going to fucking haunt you all day long now. Whoever's listening to this podcast, that's going to haunt you all day long. Do you remember the video?
No.
Anyway.
Okay, it was obviously a great story about
that. He was singing to a board that was blind, you know what I mean? She was a school teacher. Yeah, he was a school teacher. She was a school teacher. He's not really a school teacher, though. He's a singer.
Oh, he's a singer. Oh, my God. Who would have thought? This is the first time we've ever had a break from recording podcasts.
Right.
It's been a big break.
Yeah, it's a big break.
Because we just had a break.
Yeah.
And it's good to be back, isn't it?
I needed to get away.
From me.
Didn't get very far. Got to Rottnest, which was kind of like another fucking world.
Yeah.
It is kind of like another world over there. It's like this little
world. I've been there for years.
I try the kids out on the bikes. I draw my mobile number on their arm. And it's like, off you go. And they're in this little world. So they travel around the whole island and they just absolutely
Lexi was like, in the lead up to going away, she's like explaining to me how much money she's got how much she's going to spend.
How
I'm like, Lexi, I'm trying
left?
To teach her about the whole long-term, short-term thing. And I'm like, okay, you understand you can't spend this like all at once because at the end you're going to have a problem, right? So you got to space it out. And she's figured it all out. She was just, she loves it because she's like me. She likes her freedom and stuff like that. So she just knew that she was going to be able to ride around, buy her little treats, just go and explore. And she was just so excited about it.
Yeah.
So was Lola. But I think Lexi's just, that adventure in her, that adventure part of her is just next level, isn't it? She really loves that.
Well, she loves the freedom to be able to get out on her own. But
so was it good?
Yeah, it was great.
You came back pretty red.
Yeah, no, I came back brown. I actually
was brown this
time. I think you guys just say red because she's like giving me a hard time, but I think I came back pretty brown. I think I was.
Actually, it was more brown than
chocolate.
Normal.
I was more chocolate. Yeah, than strawberry.
Than what?
I was more chalky walky than strawberry warbery. Yeah. I had got a landing strip on my nose. That's right. Got very red. Anyway, so
how
good.
Was it?
It was good to get away. It was great on the boat. It's very stressful. Like, people think, oh man, you get to go out there in a boat, but you're actually, I bring in two families out with me because it's a big vessel. I get out there, I bring two families out with me. The first week, one family will stay, they'll go home. The next week, another family will stay, and then they'll go home. But they bring kids with them. And the problem is, like, I'm a shareholder in this boat, so I get it for 2 weeks out there. My shareholders are great guys. Great to be part of that little gang. But the thing is, when you're out there, is the kids stress the shit out of you on the boat. You have to get them off there because you have this thing called cabin fever, and like, kids want to climb in windows that they're not meant to climb in.
Yeah.
They want to hide. Like, two of the doors fell off, not because of the kids, but two of the doors fell off in two of the cabins. You know, and kids hang out of shit they're not meant to hang out of. They eat, like, there's a white carpet through this boat. Who puts white carpet in a boat? There's white carpet through this boat. So I'm like, no, you can't eat here. You got to eat upstairs. And then my kids are young enough that they don't understand what a napkin is. So everything's a napkin. Do you know what I mean?
Like, Lola especially.
Like, the seat is a napkin. The table is a napkin. Their friend is a napkin. But mostly their T-shirts and the seats. So they just wipe their hands on everything. And it's just like, so stressful. So I get up in the morning and I read them all the riot act, and I'm like, okay, you're going to have your breakfast in 1 hour. You're going to either jump in the water, have a swim, then get on the boat and we'll take you over to the island and you just can bugger off. And we'll come, you know, we'll go snorkeling later. I'll come and pick us up at the island. But then what happens is they, you know, they get up in the morning and they want to bugger off. So they get all their money together. So they get on the island and what do? They go straight down to the IGA. They buy all their lollies. They eat all their lollies. And then an hour later, they're back at the dock. Screaming at the dock over to the boat, Dad, come and get us. We want to get back on the boat.
They want to pee in their food coma after like, that.
Fuck off. You know? So I have to get the kids off the boat and then I have to get the adults off the boat and so that I can, you know, get rid of it. It's very stressful.
You have to find ways to stress less about shit like that.
Well, I know, I understand. But yeah, the thing is that, you know,
because I am around you when you're in that space sometimes. Yeah. I wasn't in Rottnest with you, but yeah. Sometimes. And I'm like, there are some things that you just have to let go of, I think.
Don't touch the glass?
Yeah, because when we were at your place over the holidays, yeah. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but yeah. I think it's literally crazy to expect that the kids aren't going to touch the glass. And you got the glass around the pool, you got the glass at the door, and but you're preparing for Andrew's birthday.
Yeah, so everything is clean.
And 2 days before, you've cleaned the glass. I'm like, no, that's the last thing you do. Because you spent like 3 hours of your day going, don't touch the glass, don't touch the glass. Like, and the kids are like, they don't.
Don't touch the glass. So do you understand what don't touch the glass means? Don't touch the glass means... Don't touch the glass.
And I spent 2 whole days saying to you, dude, chill the fuck out.
Oh, I know.
Dude.
And I wish I could have before.
You would have because you ended up having to clean the glass again.
Yeah.
And you should have just done it.
And again. And then I just delegated it in the end. I was like, Troy, will you clean the fucking glass?
Will you clean the glass?
Before I drown these kids in my nut.
So was it good? Did you have a good break?
I did have a good
Christmas
break.
Christmas was different this year, don't you reckon?
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, of course.
You didn't have it at your house.
No, we had it at someone else's house. And I hate not having it at my house. We have it at the sister's house. And the problem is they're a bit older. I hope they're not listening to this. Actually, poor Frank had, did I tell you Frank like literally dropped dead last week?
Yeah, you told me.
Dropped dead and then they revived him, brought him back and then he dropped dead 6 more times and then they put a pacemaker in and now he's got a pacemaker and then 2 days ago, he was bumped.
I didn't hear about 2 days ago.
Yeah, sick again. So they're really trying to keep him alive. But Frankie's a tough guy. He'll be fine. He'll come out the other side of this. But yeah, he was cycling along in Bunbury and keeled over. Mm. So they're a bit older, so they're a bit grumpier. And then we got young kids. So they're like, you know, they wanted the kids in bed at 11 o'clock. Well, let me tell you, I wasn't having a bar of that. So, because kids on Christmas Day shouldn't have to go to bed at 11 o'clock. Do you know what I mean?
Your kids, I rock up at 10:30 and your kids are still in the pool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Running around. Oliver's conked out on the couch, but the other kids are all running amok.
Yeah. And then when you have it, you know, when you have it in a house that's the size of a shoebox and you got a pool there as well and you got like, you know, 10 politically strong, you know, Irish women, and you know, including the head of all the unions of Australia sitting there, and they're all very loud, and then you got kids that are loud, and everybody's loud, and then they're all very opinionated. It gets a bit mental, you know what I mean? So in my house, at least...
Then throw in a couple of drinks here
throw
and there.
In, yeah, throw in beer and wine. But in my house, you know, there's a lot of space, so everybody can go and spread out.
Yeah.
But there just wasn't, and it was... But it was good. It was actually a really good Christmas. I went to bed, I think, at about 10:30.
Really?
Which is very unusual.
That's
for me.
That's very unusual for you. You're up late at Christmas.
I just had enough. I was like, no, I'm out. I'm out. You guys can wrestle this out yourselves. I'm done. And then we had the 50th. Andrew's 50th. And that took me about, I think it took us about, including the help of Claire Ramsey, it took us about 4 weeks to organise, 3 days to set up of 7 a.m. till 9:30 p.m. And then it took us 11 days to undo it all.
Yeah, because you didn't do it like all at once.
No.
You did it bit by bit. No. And then lockdown happened, so you couldn't get rid of all the shit.
So I couldn't get rid of everything. There was 650 beers. There was 75
We ran out of beer
of
in the first...
Yeah. 75 bottles of champagne. 75 bottles of Sauv Blanc. 50 bottles of red wine. There was a slushy machine. There was like
we thought we'd only go through one of the slushies.
I thought 80 people would turn up. There was 140 people in my lounge room. 140 people. It was insane. But it was great. It was good.
How
dance
good,
off.
It was
and
so good,
it was
wasn't
a
it?
Really good
party. Ange had a great time.
It was a white party and it was great. Every now and then someone would come up to me and go, so a white party? And I'm like, yeah. everybody's wearing white. Oh, okay. Yeah. Fucking what is wrong with people? But yeah, we had
Probably know your history.
They probably know my history. But we had a great time. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
It was good fun, yeah, wasn't it? And had fun.
Hanging out with people, you know, meeting.
Other than the stress of leading up to it, where you were like,
the end of last year.
Do you know, we were so, I was so grateful because we were, because I mean, it took, my perspective, I was there a few days helping you set it all up. But then we you know, grabbed a whole heap of people to come around and help. Your dad came around at one point and was like, he was looking around and he was like, all of these people here to help me, you know, because he's got this saying, you know, if you've got one friend on your deathbed.
On your deathbed, then you're a lucky man.
And then he rocks up and he sees all these people and he's like, oh. My perspective always like, all these people are here for him, Millsy. He's like, you know, he was telling me how, you know, how happy he was to see all these people here helping you out.
I think that's my old man. My old man is, you know, he prides himself in, you know, his sons. That's just how he is. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it was a crazy end to the year. You know, there was a lot of, at work, there was a lot of pressure, a lot of shit. Wheels fell off the fucking wagon. It was like, oh my God. And it was just a build up for everybody. Do you know what I mean? It was just a bit, there was so much effort put in last year, you know, to that big push, you know, that we had to move quickly, change direction. And it was a lot of stress, you know. And the funny thing is, I think, you know, I'm always saying nobody wakes up tomorrow morning and sabotages their business. Nobody does that.
Or deliberately does it.
Well, nobody consciously does it. You know, the conscious mind doesn't want to do that. You do that at a subconscious level. And I think that, you know, I think one of the reasons the subconscious saboteur turns up in a person's life, because when the wheels fall off the wagon, ultimately it's on me. It's not on anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's always on me. And so I learned that at a very early stage, that if you want to be able, you have to take responsibility to the best that you're able to do that. And you know, responsibility is always about your ability to respond. But I think the reason that people subconsciously sabotage things, because nobody consciously does it, is because it comes as a result of our daily actions not being aligned with our values. If our daily actions were aligned with our values, we would never sabotage our lives. You understand?
Yeah, so, I just don't know where you're coming from and why we're talking about it. You're talking about it, the fact that the end of the year or last year was just
I'll get there. So,
okay, good.
So I subconsciously sabotaged the business and where we were at. But I realized later that the reason I did that was because there was a new place I wanted us to get to and I just didn't know how to get us there.
Mm.
There was a new place I wanted to get. I was being pushed with the culture in the company from about the middle of the year. I was watching things happen. You know, we're still ironing through things. I was watching things happen. And I just saw that the company was getting bigger. More people were coming on board. And it got, you know, when you first start out in the business, there's two of you, then there's three of you, then there's four of you. And you're kind of like a family. Everybody hangs out, everybody. But the more people come in, the less you can have that connection. So it has to go from a small community to a small tribe, to a community, to a culture, to a, you know, the more numbers, the bigger it gets, the more you have to change things. And I just didn't know. I think I just didn't know how to get it from that small amount of people to that big amount of people and create a better culture and not maintain the culture. Because you're always going to have a mix of personalities in a business, right? You're always going to have, it's like anything, it's like the family dinner, you know, at Christmas time, you sit around, someone plays the joker, so everybody plays a different personality. The more you add to the dinner table, the bigger and the louder it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
And the more can go right, the more can go wrong. Mm-hmm. So I think that it was really a time that I had to stop and check in with my values and what was okay and what wasn't okay, especially within the organization, and how do I make the business a better, safer place for the guys to feel like they can work and be themselves and be heard and listened to and communicate. And I think, you know, that's been a great growth spurt in the company, but it's also been a great growth spurt for me. And by no means am I there yet, but I definitely feel that it was a great move towards getting the company to where we want to get to, because we're going from a small company to a larger company. We're getting bigger. No matter what, we're getting bigger. We're building out bigger programs. We're building out bigger seminars, online events. We're doing that. And to do that and to manage the influx, we have to be able to operate better as a business. So it was a very personal thing.
Yeah. Again, I still don't know where that came from.
What do you not understand? I don't know.
We were just talking about, like...
Well, we were talking about what happened before Christmas and the things that were going on before. Weren't we?
We were, but I'm just trying to remember what made you, like, jump into that part of the conversation. Did something were you talking about?
Pre-Christmas.
I thought we were talking about Christmas holidays.
Pre-break.
Oh.
Yeah?
Okay.
No?
No, not really, but okay.
Okay.
Because that was... It's all good. I'm just trying to figure out where we're going. So what was I going to say? So if we're talking about that, then basically you're saying that there were now I've lost my train of thought. So you're saying that you were noticing these changes and you were noticing some issues in the culture and stuff like that, and then. What was your realization? What was your realization there?
You want me to go back over my
realization? Yeah, I do, because I feel like I'm not clear. Because you just say it again so that I can get clear with what I was going to ask next.
It was to do with the pressure that was building, and when something happens in the bit, because it came to the end of the year, there was a lot of pressures last year.
Yeah.
We get to the end of the year, and then I kind of felt like the wheels fell off the wagon.
Yeah.
And the wheels falling off the wagon, I had to stop and look at why that had happened. And I had to look at, take responsibility and go, shit, the wheels fell off the wagon here. And I had to look at what had gone on and why it had gone on and what it was I needed to do. And I was contemplating, why do we fucking sabotage stuff,
Right, yeah,
Why do we sabotage at the end of the year? Why does it tend to happen like that?
But you're saying that the reason that you feel like that happened is because there was a part of you wanted another level, you wanted another part.
Which was my value, which in the business value was I wanted to be able to connect better. People to be able to connect with us. I wanted to have that connection. But I couldn't do it the way we were doing it.
Yeah.
Because there was too many people coming into the organization. So we subconsciously sabotage things because in our daily activities and actions, we're not living in accordance with what's most important to us.
Got it.
If we were living in accordance with what's most important was, we wouldn't subconsciously sabotage things. That's not what we would do.
Yeah. So what's changed now? I mean, I know what's changed, but just share.
Well, just putting proper systems and procedures in place that we didn't. We were flying by the seat of our pants, I think, in terms of the organization and the systems and procedures that we had in there.
I think don't you feel like, I don't know, this might just be me, but don't you think that there are times where you kind of wake up to the fact that you have been flying by the seat of your pants, even though you've thought you've had certain structures in place?
You're getting away with it. Do you know what I mean? You know you're getting away with it.
You're being able to get by.
Yeah, but it's inevitable. You don't want it to happen. You don't want to have to stop and dismantle how you're doing things and reorganizing again and rebuild things. You don't want to have to do that. So you keep banking, hoping and praying that you can get away with it.
But I think that this is what I'm saying. It's not just about business. It's about everything, even people's finances or
relationships. A very great example is relationships.
And stuff like that. And sometimes you just kind of go wake up and go, hang on a second. I've just, even if you've got a system in place, right, it's sometimes you look at it and go, hang on a second, that's only worked to a degree and I now need to stop and go, right, I need to relook at this. It can't work any further.
You ultimately know I want to be a better person here. I want to be a better, I want to connect better. There's conversations I want to be able to have. But I'm getting away with it at the moment without having those conversations. But ultimately, when you sabotage stuff, it's because you want to get there, you want to be there, you want to be in that place.
And that's why you get
So sabotage is not a bad thing. Fucking things up is not a bad thing, as long as you know that the reason you fuck it up is because life is trying to get you to reorganize and be better at what you do.
That was a big learning for me last year, was about systems and about understanding that instead of letting your emotions or instead of flying by the seat of your pants or guessing or whatever, that everything has a system to it. You just have to find the system that works for you, whether that's in terms of your health, whether that's in terms of your money, whether that's in terms, in this case that you're talking about, in terms of your business and about the culture and about the whatever other elements of your business, in terms of, customer service or whatever it happens to be. There's systems that you can put in place that help that. And so then the emotion doesn't run the show. And I think super important because of the emotion running the show is what has got in the way of so many things for me personally, as well as for what I've seen in the business and what I've seen in, you know, around me, you know. And I think I had a massive realization probably around September, October last year that actually everything's a system. You've got to actually just put the right system in place for you, you know. And I think
well, if you don't, I think if you don't, you know, no, emotions are just like you know, I've said it to you a few times. It's like trying to grab air. You can't pinpoint a problem with emotion. You have to go to the problem.
Yeah.
What happened? When did it happen? How did it happen? What do we need to do to sort it out? And then that's all emotions are trying to get you to do anyway.
Yeah, they're trying to get you back to that point to understand, to get clear. Yeah.
It's a bit like doing an equilibration. People are all emotional about something, but when you go to the nuts and bolts of it, okay, who said it?
Yeah.
Who saw it? Where have you said it? You know, how did you say it? What did you want him to say? And you know, when you go and break it all down, that's when the realization comes about, and then you're not emotional anymore.
I've just had a realization. If you had put a system in place for Ange's birthday party, you would not have been emotional about those doors and the glass, and then you would have been fine.
If I hadn't known that on the final day when the kids are gone. Especially one.
No,
one
I told you that all the way through.
Like one particular kid just keeps like.
I know. He was having a really hard time of it because you were just like. And he was like, oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So I'm not going to put my hand on the glass. Yeah. No, don't do that. So I'm not allowed to put my no.
And he always realized after you told him. Systems, Mitchie, systems.
That's right, baby.
Well, we had a good break anyway, didn't we?
Yeah, it was great.
And had a lot of learnings at the end of last year. And I think we've come back in fresh and we've put all those systems in place, ready to rock and roll.
Well, we're putting, so.
Well, we've put them in place and then we're open to adjusting them and shifting them as necessary.
Yeah.
Don't you reckon?
Yeah.
It's been good.
It has.
Welcome to 2021.
See you, kids.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.